5 to go. Lewis has been awesome. Let's it go.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backcourt. Turner crossed the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He makes it! He hit it just inside of half court.
Lane's on the other wing. He finds
it. Oh! 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 Sent it in, Jerome!
College basketball! This is March Madness!
Yes, it is. Again, this open works. It fits this month. I'm Timmy Hall, your college basketball friend. Evil Bald Colin is here. Jacob Reimer, Rhyme Time, will be along in some upcoming segments here. We sort of piece it together when we've got a crazy Friday in the office. We're all trying to do our stuff and enjoy tournament basketball at the same time. Now, Evil.
I think he wanted to make it for this segment, but he probably was too busy crying over Elliot Cadeau entering the portal. Because I know he was pretty upset about that.
All right, good way to start. Because it isn't it's wild, right? This is not just a March Madness episode. This is a portal.
It's an
madness
everything
episode.
It's an everything episode.
This sport is insane right now.
Absolutely.
Right before we started recording, our heads are spinning. People are asking me so many questions.
Well, you're the insider.
I do not know what the full, truthful story is with Michi Johnson.
We won't really ever know
that. I don't know if we're going to get it for years' time, but the article just came out where he talked to Adam Jardy, who covers this Buckeye basketball team as often as anybody, right? He's one of the few full-time reporters. Like, that's his job, covering that team. And it went full-bore mental health. Like, we finally got the words, mental health, that's why he didn't play.
Yeah, and I'm sure that played a very big part in it. And I saw in the piece, it was talking about a grandparent he lost while he was at South Carolina that was pretty close to him. I totally get that.
That's absolutely fair. That is fair, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But
is it fair to ask questions about?
Yes, that's where I was going to get to. I think
what happened with the money, what happened with the NIL, what happened with other things on the team. You're going back to playing basketball.
Yeah,
because
it's
you're going
definitely
into the
a real.
Now and
well, he's
looking to continue.
He's got to get the waiver. That's pretty key. If he doesn't get the waiver, he can't play.
Was right in line, and I hate doing this. I want to preface this by saying I hate doing this.
Yes,
I hate having a conversation because mental health. I go to therapy bi-weekly. I didn't start doing it until 2024. It was something my wife pushed me to for a long, long time, and I finally started going, and I encourage everybody to go because we all got things in our lives. We all got issues, even if we're happy, even if we're generally happy people, right? It helps, and I hate having these conversations, but I think, you know, when you're a fan of a basketball team, you're looking at, clearly we can agree it had an effect on Ohio State's basketball team. I don't think anybody would deny that.
I wonder what the magnitude of it was, but yes, in some way, shape, or form, it did impact the season because it hurt the depth of the guard position, which Ohio State clearly had issues with trying to fit in pieces like Quez Glover that just weren't working. So yeah, I think it did play a part.
Well, I can also see where things that start as basketball issues then, because again, if it's like with anything in your life, right? No matter. Something happens and it's going to affect your mental well-being, right? But a lot of times there are reasons why you become depressed or you become antsy or you become anxious. And it just leads you to wonder maybe what was happening with the basketball team where basketball was negatively affecting his mental health that forced him to make this decision. But then again, where is that line? Because he is right on that line where he's going to be able to, you know, fall under that medical hardship waiver or mental health waiver. We saw this before with an Ohio State guard. One has nothing to do with the other, but other than that, we've seen this before as Buckeye basketball fans.
Yes.
Where a talented guard left and then popped up somewhere else in college basketball. It's just, I think I'm a little bit different now in my thinking of, I don't know, where at first I had a stance where say something like, could we have communicated this better if it was mental health? You come out there and say that, and I think everybody stands off and backs down a little bit. In talking to some people, I also see the side of people might not want you speaking about that if that's what you are going through and you needed to step away. I don't want you talking about my mental health situations. That's private. And then Meachie is actually saying something in the article about talk to my therapist. You know, we're not going to do that.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I'm not going to do that. That's your business, her business, or his business. That's private between you guys.
But regardless, this was a situation where I think it's probably in the best interest of both parties to move on and start over in a different spot. So I get it. Again, I'll respect his decision. I'll respect his reasoning behind everything, but it's time to move on for both sides.
Yeah, and again, everybody is pointing to there's a player related to Meachie Johnson, that's a big commitment for Ohio State, and there were talks of reclassification with Marcus Johnson, and so I'm sure that made it even more of a sensitive subject. You wanted things, even though this was really disappointing to not have him, you know, providing his basketball services at a high level, the real life aspect comes into it, and you got to respect it. At some point you just have to be accepting of it, right? And I guess that's where they got with this. And you know, I'm sure that they want the relationship with Marcus Johnson to stay strong. That one doesn't have to do with the other. It didn't work out with Meachie Johnson, and he experienced some things here negatively that forced him to step away, but that doesn't mean it has to go that way with Marcus.
No, yeah, you definitely have, there's definitely layers to it that you have to play it a certain way and just kind of go with what best fits Meachie and the family and the extended family and what they want. And I think considering all of the factors involved, I think Jake and the team handled that part pretty well.
Yeah, again, I go back on that. I don't know what else they could have said other than keeping things vague, because that's up to Meachie. That's up to Meachie to discuss that, which he ultimately did, which makes sense that he wanted to wait until the season was over to speak up and talk about this. But this was...
The timing was a little weird. It was a day and a half before he enters the portal, technically.
Of course, again.
But he probably felt he needed to say something before he did that because he probably didn't want it to be portrayed as something as other than what he believes it is.
And if his story is, look, I was experiencing mental health issues in this situation here that I was in, and basketball wasn't helping it, and I needed to go away, but that doesn't mean I want to be done playing basketball forever, and I do have a year of eligibility, so be it, you know? So be it. Best of luck, and that's the way the story goes. That's the way the world works right here. Now, the other thing that was going on with the transfer portal is the Buckeyes already got somebody else in, and they added a guard. At the same time, John Mobley announces he's coming back. Still haven't, at the time we're talking, don't know about Bruce Thornton's future. You'd like to assume and hope that he's coming back, but if we have to get an announcement that a true freshman is coming back with Gabe Cupps, former Indiana guard, former Ohio Mr. Basketball, coming in, I'd like to hope that Gabe Cupps is more of a bench piece.
Yes.
See what he can do, because
absolutely,
he has not shown anything yet. It doesn't mean he can't be a good college basketball player, but we're 2 years in. We've got an injury, and he was probably thrust into it a little too early as a true freshman with, I think, was it Xavier Johnson? Xavier, who is their transfer point guard from Pitt?
Xavier Johnson, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think he went down. They needed Cupps to come in there. He pretty much was giving you 2 points per game and maybe one or two assists and rebounds per game in 22 minutes of action. So he struggled a little bit.
Yeah, the positive.
But he's the one guy.
The positive way to look at this is if he comes in and becomes the one-for-one Quez Glover replacement and performs above a Quez Glover replacement level, I think that's a win. But yeah, I wouldn't want to depend on a guy that's played sparingly the past 2 years, or since his injury. He played a lot 2 years ago, but I wouldn't want to depend on that as my number one point guard. That just doesn't feel great. And I know Tayson Chapman also has some point guard background too, so it gives you, in my mind, more depth at the position rather than someone you need to depend on for 30-plus minutes.
There's depth, and again, you and I are in agreement. We're hoping that Gabe is not counted on to be a starter. If he is, then something with the plan was
probably
off here.
Yeah,
probably went wrong. And again, it's not like that can't happen, because I really just can't imagine what it's like to be in one of the war rooms. And I think it's a war room every
well,
single
we
day.
We didn't plan on Mobley starting 30-plus games.
Or... But do you know what I mean, though? Because everybody, what was it, over 700 people went into the portal day one
this
year?
I thought it was over 1,000.
Over 1,000.
Like, last year,
then
it was like around 300 or something. Like, it was a drastic difference from last year to this year.
It's just insane. So when you think about it, yes, we all have our standards, and no, those shouldn't change. But at the same time, they can only go, Jake Diebler and his staff can only go and get who they can get with the support they're given by the collectives and the foundations and whatever ultimately is decided, because salaries are coming in too. So they'll have that, because I was talking to women's basketball coach Kevin McGuff, who just, poof, lost Cody McMahon. And that sucks, right?
That's drastic.
But they
yeah.
get the salaries, but that's going to be decided by the powers that be. Like, who gets, women's basketball gets this much in this bucket, football gets this much in this bucket, which will be almost all of it, men's basketball gets this much in this bucket, and then you divvy up between the players. So salaries, and as far as how NIL works for now, it's kind of a mystery, but you can only kind of do so much with the support that you're given. And is men's basketball going to be supported? Like, we saw that one report of a Big East coach saying, oh, I've heard Ohio State's going to be one of the biggest swingers in transfer portal dollars. Well, we hope that the names, right, and the production ultimately matches that money that is talked about.
Well, yeah, it's that. And then I believe it was On Three that had the report that most Power Five starters, or Power Conference starters, I should say, are making around $1 million a year. So, I mean, you have to factor that in if you're trying to replace your five spot. You got to replace the three with Parrish leaving the lineup. So there's
you do.
Technically two positions, unless if you're putting in one of your current fives on the roster, which I would probably advise there's two spots that probably around $2 million you have to allocate for starting positions. It's quite a task depending on what the budget is.
All right, the portal is going crazy. Michi is gone. Gabe Cupps from Indiana is in, and John Mobley is back at the time that we're chatting, and there could be a lot. There could be a lot. Depending on when you pick up this podcast, you could be staring at a piece of news on your device right there. But we talked a lot of portal. There's still more. There's a coach, an elder statesman of the game, that had some thoughts on this. And, of course, we haven't even talked about the NCAA tournament and what we've seen so far with some Sweet 16 games under our belt while we're doing this. You're locked in to Mad About Hoops.
All college basketball, all the time. You're listening to Mad About Hoops, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin. All of you college basketball fans out there, we thank you for checking out the podcast. Look, I'd never heard of the ranking before, but it was really cool to see this outfit called Million Podcasts put us in the top 100 college basketball pods.
Not the top 1 million?
Not the top 1 million. We did better than the top million, but it feels like there are a million college basketball pods out there. The funny thing about it, too, in scanning the list, is One Shining Podcast was number one, so it did take a look at a lot of big-time pods that we know of, right? Ones that we have checked out, ones that we listened to. So Tate Frazier's up there. I mean, you got Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander, Eye on College Basketball. They were two. Nick Baugh, former Kansas Jayhawk. He's been doing his thing. He was number three. Three Man Weave, pretty good. And then a Duke basketball report in the top five. We are looking up at a Dayton-specific college basketball podcast at number 50. So we're trying to do some work there. But because of a little glitch, we appeared at number 57. And then later on down the list, we popped in again at number 72. So I don't know. Twice on the list. That's got to be a good thing.
Okay.
But take the higher ranking.
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah, we're going to take the higher ranking there. So Sweet 16 games, we got to watch Thursday action. And there are such dominant big names and big games that we expected to see close scores. But Alabama just dismantling BYU. I think of all four of the first games, the story there was Bama's offense, and you can see that if they're going to be on, which again, that's going to be hard for them to replicate, but if they can get near that level, they can beat anybody in the country and be national champs.
Absolutely. No, Alabama, I think for their money, got the draw that they were probably hoping for when they played a St. Mary's team that was drastically different in styles, more defensive-minded, slower pace. Could they speed them up and get them going? That's eventually what Alabama did.
Exactly.
Got them out of their rhythm.
It was weird for St. Mary's, and you could tell.
Absolutely. And then they played a team very similar to them in BYU that's going to throw up threes and try to get to the rim. That's the two options in their offensive style that they want to do. And they just ran into the team that was better at doing it in Alabama. And, I mean, if you're going to put up 51 threes and hit, I believe it was 25 of them,
A record.
It's hard to,
a record.
Hard to beat that.
Yeah, just a record, which was crazy, 25 threes. And they had that record, I want to say, when they hit 22,
I believe
when there was still
the
8 minutes to go.
I believe the attempted threes just broke a recent record that Texas Tech set a couple games earlier. I think Texas Tech was in the 40s in their three-point shot attempts. So that would be, that's pretty crazy that that record had been broken not once but twice in the same tournament about a week or so apart.
And Mark Sears hit 10 of them. The former Ohio Bobcat, he
34 points.
He is just so good. He scored 30 of those 34 points, obviously, on three-point shots. And he had been on a little bit of a rough patch shooting.
He was.
Coming into this game. He's still a good player, but his downtown shot had not been there. And when that thing clicked in, my goodness, was Bama tough to beat.
Yeah, he's a streaky shooter. So when he's hot, he's putting in a performance like this. And games against teams like Youngstown State where it doesn't hit often or early and he doesn't get going early, he tends to struggle throughout. But where he really makes it up for himself is he's really good at getting to the free throw line when he does attack the hoop. So he still can get his when it's time. But when he's hot like this, Alabama's one of the best teams in the country.
Are you sad to see the tater tot king, Richie Saunders of BYU, out of the mix now?
He went out pretty good with a 25-point game. But
he's a good player. But the tater tot king is gone. It's not the greatest nickname, but, I mean, hey, you're going to take it, right? If Or Ida wants to come by and throw a bunch of NIL cash because you're great. Now this, honestly, saying that your great grandfather invented tater tots, does that not sound like a made up thing?
It does.
It's one of those vague things that I don't know if it could be pointed to any one individual. Like, I invented tater tots.
What's
right?
actually kind of crazy about this is you've got Saunders, who's related to the creator of the tater tot. And then Kevin Young is a distant relative of
Brigham Young
himself.
Right. Boy, they got some powerful history there.
it's insane.
Did somebody else on that team, did their great-grandfather invent the Cobb salad, you know?
We could look into it. But
that's mine.
No, this was actually a really fun BYU team, and you saw it throughout the year. They went on a really hot streak towards the end of the year, and teams like that get hot heading into the tournament usually perform well when it comes to these couple of weeks, and they did. Like I said, they just ran into a team that was hotter in the tournament and played the same style as them. But
they scored 113 points, CB.
I think Kevin Young and BYU will be fine.
They had 100 at the under 8 minute timeout. No, BYU's program looks good, right? You want that coach to be there as
what
long
a step up.
As you can have.
And they needed to. Going from the West Coast Conference up to the Big 12, they really needed to take that next step. And give all credit to Kevin Young, man. He's going to build something nice there. And AJ DeBanza, the top recruit coming in next year.
Right, yeah.
He's going to be a really good player for them.
Was it reportedly a $4 million deal or
a $7
million deal?
I thought it was like closer
NIL
to seven.
Deal.
But they have that money, man. The people that support BYU really love their basketball and really love
the fun.
Just get
it from the church.
Well, I don't know how exactly
how
that's
that work?
Working.
Yeah, separation of church and school. There's no separation of church and school.
But there's a lot of wealthy people in the area of Provo, Utah that I think are doing a great job at funding their NIL program.
Oh, man. Like, and you're seeing it there. It's quite a run. And I should have known when BYU demolished KU by 33 points.
That's right.
It was a historic loss for Kansas at the time a couple months back. That should have been the telltale sign. The other game, Duke had had it under control and then got pushed a little bit by Arizona. So credit the Cats for coming back and sticking in that game. Vassar was really effective.
Arizona
down
played
low post. Caleb Love obviously was special as well.
Yeah, Arizona played a great game. And in my opinion, they played almost a perfect first half. Had 42 points, was looking great, getting to the line. They were very efficient from the line. But then you look up at halftime and Duke's up 6, and it's almost like, this is almost a perfect performance from Arizona, and they're still down after the buzzer beater by Cooper Flagg.
Cooper hits a buzzer. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? And he's giving the LFGs while he's going into the halftime.
Yeah, it just
felt
like Duke proved that, okay, you're going to play your best game, and we're still going to be head and shoulders above you. That's where I kind of felt comfortable. Okay, Duke's going to take this go. It looks like the best team in this tournament outside of maybe Florida right now. I think it's probably down to those two teams.
And Maryland was a really, really good-looking squad. Really good roster, good bigs, good wings,
a good starting
good
five. And that's kind of where
the depth was a really great starting five, and the depth becomes an issue. Derek Queen had 27 points but couldn't handle it, and Florida storms Maryland 87-71. But how about the comeback for Texas Tech, the nightcap?
Massive.
You know, before Arizona made the comeback, it looked like you were going to get four games that were just whitewashes, double-digit wins by somebody. Arizona winds up getting the cover. Arkansas, I believe, was the underdog, so they still covered. But overtime game, 85-83, John L. Davis. Again, I don't know which former FAU Al I love the most. Martin's great for Florida. Golden's great for Michigan. But John L. Davis with 30 points for Arkansas, but they go down. Toppin was great for Texas Tech, and some other players stepping up in the end for Texas Tech as well. Darian Williams was awesome. Yeah. Big-time plays.
Darian Williams is funny because he's listed as like a guard-forward combo, but that guy is built like a traditional like undersized four, man. He knows how to use his body down in a post, and you saw the great example of it with that final bucket with 7 seconds left in overtime to be the eventual game winner. Was kind of confused on what not Kentucky, Cal's not there anymore, what Arkansas's plan was on that final possession with DJ Wagner. It just looked very disjointed. They didn't really have anything planned. And
you heard what he said about the timeout, right?
He typically lets it play out.
Typically lets it play out when there's that little time.
Hindsight, he would call it.
Yeah, well, that's knowing that he missed the shot. So right. I don't know anyone in hindsight wouldn't have, at the 5 second mark, called a timeout. Yes, obviously you have to get the ball inbounded, and that's an extra element of it, but that's also something that you can work to your advantage, too, as a tactical coach.
And Wagner's a good player, but that's not who you want it in the hands of. You probably want it in either Janelle Davis or Brazil. Trevin Brazil was pretty nice, during the stretch of that game. But, yeah, no, Tech did this without one of their best scorers in Chance McMillan. They've done this, actually, this entire tournament without him. This run's been pretty impressive, and I don't think Tech is going to get by Florida, but in terms of the Elite Eight, it's probably the most intriguing right now because Florida has kind of ebbed and flowed through this tournament, eventually pulled away from Maryland, but I think Tech does have the ability to make it scary late.
You know what? It's the contested two that's not driving at the basket. That's exactly what you don't want when you're down by two. A deep fadeaway contested two jump shot, not the thing you're looking for, which is why he would go back in hindsight, Cal, and take the timeout and set up a three for the win. You'd much rather have a feet and shoulder square, taking a three-pointer to try to win at the buzzer, or Brazil or somebody attacking the basket to either score off the glass, get fouled, or potentially get that tip in.
Yeah, you nailed it. Those are the two options. And again, when you don't call the timeout, there's no real organization. You would have liked DJ Wagner to have more awareness on what was probably the best option there, but you know what? It played out in Texas Tech's favor, and they're on to the Elite Eight.
All right, I teased it back then, but I'm going to do the next segment. CB will step out. I'll do the next segment with Rhyme Time about that elder statesman of the game who had some big-time thoughts about the transfer portal and where it is. A lot of talk about how it is just not good for college basketball right now. Keep it locked. It's Mad About Hoops.
Was it not picking me up? What the heck?
It was a bus here. I don't know who's fucking with this stuff.
I have no idea.
God dang it.
I feel like I was cooking too.
We were cooking.
Dang it.
Ah! Restart.
One of these men is evil and bald. The other one is Timmy Hall, swinging his meat bat. You're listening to Mad About Hoops on The Fan.
Mad About Hoops. I'm Timmy Hall. Evil has stepped out for a segment. Rhyme Time. Jacob Reimer is in. If we sound pissed, it's because we actually recorded about 4 or 5 minutes of this already. And a damn button was not pressed, and we're in the same studio we're always in doing our pod, and someone's effing with the buttons.
Oh, my goodness.
We were cooking, too. We kept a little clip in there on the podcast only, so you can hear what that sounded like back there. You want the unfiltered version, you're going to have to go only to wherever you get your audio. Download and subscribe to Mad About Hoops. We say hello to all the people listening on the replay on The Fan on Saturday morning. Oh, boy. I'm going to get to some portal stuff. I mentioned this. We're going to hear from Tom Izzo coming up.
Yeah.
But a lot of people I heard were bringing up the game times and how the basketball has been staggered in the NCAA tournament. And I get it when last night you had Arizona do. I just did it. On Thursday.
I'm rubbing off on you. I've done it too much.
For the first Sweet 16 games, you had Duke, Arizona, and Arkansas, Texas Tech pretty much finishing up at the same time.
Yeah.
I think they can stagger those a little bit better. I did love in the round of 32 how you get a standalone day, a game to start the day. I think that's cool. I think they could then do a little bit better after that first standalone game, because someone had pointed out, and I heard a lot of chirping about this, too many games, like four games were going past 10 o'clock in the round of 32 on the first opening weekend, that first Saturday and Sunday. And I get that, but I did love getting to watch Florida and UConn all by itself and not having to try to watch three other games going all over the place.
Right. So like there was on that Sunday, there was the BYU Wisconsin banging with Houston and Gonzaga. I'm all rattled now, but those two, those two tight finishes there. And it was like, I don't know where to have my eyeballs at. I think it would be nice if you had like halfway through the second game of that standalone. So like we had Florida, UConn, and then Duke and Baylor. If you had another one
halfway
start
through Duke, Baylor,
halfway
get
through
it going.
That, instead of waiting until I think it was what, Kentucky, Illinois at 5:15.
Yeah, it was the first two happened with nothing else on. I agree with you. If you got that thing going maybe in the middle of that second game, that can give you a better path to the end of the night.
I feel like that gets it a little bit more flowing smoothly. I did like it when, now this was kind of biased for when it was here in 2019. I feel like it's always been this way too. Maybe not when it was like 2015, but when the games were in Columbus, they've had them as the first two games of the day. I've liked that because I've gone to the games.
I go
and check them out.
For sure. That's better. You're not out till midnight.
Right.
Not like you wouldn't want to be out till midnight if it's the Thursday, Friday.
Exactly.
Because you're getting everyone's out till midnight.
Mm-hmm.
You got to start action at 12 because you got four games to play.
Right.
You got to have 12 and 2:30, 2:45, then the break, and then your evening session.
So like 2019, there was, I'm pretty sure, Tennessee and Iowa was the first game, and then North Carolina and Washington was the second game.
I was there for those.
Yeah. And I was loving that game, getting to watch North Carolina at Nationwide Arena. But then by the time I got home, I got to watch the end of that Duke and Central Florida game and Taco Fall, and that crazy finish that game was. So I liked
Taco
that.
Taco Fall. Yeah.
And they
7'6".
And Duke should have lost that game.
Yeah, that was a close game. That was a wild game.
Yeah.
Johnny Dawkins was coaching Central Florida.
Yep.
Yeah, the former Coach K, longtime Coach K bench coach.
Yeah, I loved that aspect of it, of getting to watch the first two games of the day in person and then coming home and I'm settled in to getting to watch the rest of the games that day. But I also do understand it, how it did get pretty jumbled up in the evening slate the past weekend.
You know, the national championship game is going to be at 8:50 on a Monday night.
Oh, man.
So this is the second to last replay that folks will be hearing on the Fan.
Sad.
And then we're going to, it is sad, but we do get Skip Mossack's tee to green.
Oh, and it'll be right
and
around.
We know,
it'll be Masters time too.
We know. It switches from ba da ba 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 to da na na. Hello, friends.
Also,
you're an idiot, by the way. God. You suck, by the way.
I know.
You text me the other day. It was sad when Jim Nance was done with college basketball. And you're like, oh, Jim Nance just said he's going to be done with the Masters in one more year. And I'm like, oh, really? Like, just 2026, that's it? Oh, my bad. 2036. Which, by the way, Jim, thanks a lot. What are you trying to be? Like Coach K times 50?
Yeah, it's an 11-year retirement tour. Yep.
It's going to be the 100th Masters.
Which it makes
sense. I get that, but you don't need to say that.
Yeah.
Say that, and we don't even know if you'll be alive. I hope you are.
Yeah.
I hope you are.
Exactly.
But a lot can happen in those 11 years. But let's listen to Tom Izzo, because transfer portal is just crazy right now, and you can fully understand where he's at with having a coach in the tournament. The portal is open while a lot of these good teams are still going strong in the NCAA tournament, and how can this be?
I'm going to worry today about the guys I got in this program that have done an incredible job this year, and that's it. And if that costs me later, so be it. But Tom Izzo isn't cheating the people that he has that have been loyal to him for this chaos that is going on out there. I'm going to do what's fair to the kids. I'm going to give them every ounce of energy I have until we lose. Then I'll worry about the next stage.
Absolutely impassioned, Tom Izzo.
I love that.
He gets a lot of respect from everybody. He can talk like that because he's been around the block. He's won a national championship, and it pains him, not just for Michigan State, but I think for the conference, that it's been that he's the last team to win a national championship. But we know his Final Four record, and I read that part of those comments, he spoke for 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a very long clip
about this portal subject. And he's not wrong. Like, this is one area where in football, it's very weird because the end of the sport is happening right when the semester is ending.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what is the main issue and what's jumbled up in football. But they still have to figure that out. And they still need to come up with some kind of exception. So it's not going all the way through a college football playoff run, which goes to the end of January. They have to fix their calendar. But here, we still have plenty of school left. The tournament's going to be over really soon.
Yeah.
Really soon. You could just wait.
It goes by quick.
What am I missing here to open the portal?
Yeah, I'm completely against it. Like, you have, like, names going in every which way. Like, there we know.
Anyone listening to this podcast right now, you're probably looking, and I said it earlier, you're looking at your device. Another piece of news has happened that we haven't hit on yet.
Right, exactly. Like, we could have a huge name hit the portal by the time, this comes out.
Big time.
But, like, yeah, it's not fair to the teams still in it that are competing and trying to win a national championship. Mm-mm. Like this Michigan State squad, they've been fun to watch. And Tom Izzo has every right to be upset about this question because he is focused on this group and the passion that they've been playing with all year long. He doesn't want to worry about what next year's roster is going to look like yet.
The other thing, too, that is really, I don't know if there is a way to handle this part of it. It's just tricky and it can get ugly. And that's just the point of it here. I wonder what a guy like Tom Izzo, because he's never leaving Michigan State, but he understands that that's not how it goes for everybody in the coaching biz. And everybody can't have a run like that at Michigan State. Kevin Willard, after Maryland gets bounced from Florida, Willard has been, if you guys haven't been following him, he's been interesting. He's been blasting Maryland athletics through this whole tournament when he hits one of those podiums with the March Madness logos behind him. Talking about how, yeah, I got an AD that's not going to be here. He's going to go to SMU. We all know that. I wasn't allowed to stay an extra night in New York earlier this year when I wanted to for team bonding. They said, nope, it's too expensive. We were one of the lowest in NIL. I have no clue if I'm ever going to get what I need here, and I want to win a national championship. Blasting him. And then the Villanova reports come out. And then after the game, just Kevin Willard talking about his future, just more good and odd stuff from Willard.
So I have not even, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just be honest with you. I haven't talked to my agent. I haven't talked to my wife. I made a promise to this team that I was going to just focus on this team, and that's all I've done. So I haven't talked to anybody. Right now, my biggest concerns in life right now, you know, I don't know who my boss is going to be. It's the guy that brought me here, who I really liked and appreciative of him bringing me to College Park.
So Evans is going to be going. I don't think anyone buys Kevin Willard at all.
No.
But it's such an awkward spot to be in when you're fielding all the questions. And this is just how the whole process has worked.
Yeah.
You got to go after coaches that are still in the tournament. That's how you want the coaches that are hot commodities. More than likely, they've had good runs that season. That's why they get those next jobs.
Well, and this is kind of to the transfer portal being open so early. Like, you have to, like, a team
coaching
like,
portal, transfer portal, it's all right now.
Yeah, the Villanova has to start making moves to bring in their next head coach now
or
because
else they're
the
selling another
portal.
Season down the river.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to take longer to get them back to where they belong. But it really does stink for this Maryland team. Like, they've had a great vibe all year with the Crab Five and everything.
And they like them, you know?
Yeah.
They
and
like them.
It's the best basketball they've had in College Park in years. I mean, the first Sweet 16 in forever for Maryland. And now it just feels like that is now all shoved under the rug because of the dark cloud that Kevin Willard has brought over the program with everything that he's brought with him of the Villanova reports and now complaining about the NIL.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stinks to see their season kind of end this way.
I think Maryland fans can be mad. I think they might be mad at the wrong people here. I think you need to be mad at the president and mad at having no athletic director and the support.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is unacceptable. You don't have a coach like this get away for something better that's in your region.
Yeah.
You're a Big Ten basketball program, damn it.
Yeah.
You're the Maryland Terrapins. You're the most recent Big Ten national champ.
This is true. This is true.
You should be aiming higher and trying to be one of those teams. You got DC right in your shadows. All right, so you and CB finishing things up in the next segment, taking a look at some who could be the first teams to punch their tickets to the Final Four. Oh, boy. Guys, keep it locked. It's Mad About Hoops.
All the college basketball talk you can handle. You're listening to Mad About Hoops, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Mad About Hoops, CB, rhyme time. We kicked Timmy Hall out of the booth because we heard enough from him today. Let's talk about the Elite Eight matchups we're going to get on Saturday because, again, we're recording this Friday afternoon, so our Saturday morning crowd. We will get you ready for the action of Saturday, which is a two-game schedule. First off,
yeah, we got two standalone games. It's not going to be all jumbled up anymore now.
Now, you can't start them before 6 o'clock on a weekend. That just doesn't make any sense.
If you're just now joining us, go listen to the podcast. Timmy and I talked about that a little bit in the last segment.
Yeah, it's brutal, man. It's brutal. I don't have a super early wake-up time, but I can only imagine people trying to stay up until 12:30, 1 o'clock, and they do.
Yeah.
How tough that would be. But, yeah, let's get into this real quick. First off, when you see the AT&T Cooper Flagg commercial, are you yelling bingo with him too?
I am a big fan of that commercial. It's grown on me. I love it. And then just the nice one, Coop. I'm pretty sure that's his actual grandma.
It's got to be.
Because I think I've seen her sitting next to his parents at a game. Like, they just cut to them after he makes a big play. And I thought she was sitting right next to them. But I like it. It's pretty good.
No, good for them. It's good to see these athletes making the money in ways that, you know, are very entertaining and fun for us at the same time. So that's pretty cool. All right, let's just kind of do a deep breakdown into these two games on Saturday. So we know that Texas Tech moves on, completes the big comeback against Arkansas. They will face the Florida Gators, who was in a pretty tight game for most of that Maryland game before just pulling away. Maybe the depth and the rotations of Florida were just too much for Maryland to keep up with.
Yeah, that showed when Condon went down, and he's going to be a serious factor in the game against Texas Tech will be his health. And that was kind of the injury that he had that had him out earlier in the season. And that's what you really want when you're winning, when you go on to win a national championship, you want to make sure you're at full health. But Florida is so deep that they have the guys behind him to fill in and still be that best rebounding team in the country and provide an impact guarding down low. I mean, they're gonna have their hands full with JT Toppin, that's for sure.
Yeah, so talking about depth, I didn't really think Texas Tech had a ton to lose a guy like Chance McMillan for the entire NCAA tournament run so far, but they've done enough, and without him, there's been guys stepping up like Kerwin Walton that have really picked up the scoring pace.
The last Roy Williams commit that is still in the field. How crazy is that?
That is pretty crazy.
And that class was loaded. It had RJ and Caleb Love, of course, Walker Kessler, who's in the league, and Daron Sharp, and Puff Johnson, Cam Johnson's little brother.
By the way, speaking of Roy Williams, we're coming up on on Saturday, it'll be the 29th. We're 2 days away from the anniversary of Roy Williams. Is he actually retiring? Is this real news?
That was the weirdest day. Is this April Fool's? Like, what is happening? And I was doing my own podcast at the time, Beyond the Arc, and I had just filmed, I just recorded one without knowing that had happened. So, like, I got my podcast posted and everything, and then all of a sudden, as I'm figuring out that this is real, I'm like, all right, I'm going to do something short tomorrow reacting to this. And it was just so crazy. And then you've got the scene of him in the Dean Dome with everything going on behind him with the Argyle and the Carolina Blue and making his final statements. And it was like, what is next for Carolina basketball?
Yeah, I didn't even believe it until he started talking because I thought, oh, man. Maybe
how deep are we going to go with this
April
Fool's joke?
Maybe a fake press conference. Just have some fun with it. Announce. Like, you have to, if you're going to fake that a prank, you have to at least have something to announce. Otherwise, you're wasting a lot of people's time showing up
right
to the Dean Dome to go listen to
lots of former players coming back and everything.
Exactly. But interesting coaching matchup in this first one, Texas Tech. We got Grant McCaslin. He was originally at North Texas, comes over to Tech, carries on what has been a pretty interestingly rich tradition in the last decade for the Red Raiders against Todd Golden, the young up-and-coming from San Francisco. I think he coached at Yale a little bit, too, or
that
maybe Columbia,
right.
One of those Ivy League
schools.
He's
a part of the Bruce Pearl tree, though, right?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to favor the one seed probably in this situation, but if they don't have Chance McMillan back, I think the luck kind of runs out for the Red Raiders.
I feel that watching this Florida team, I may have said this already on this pod before. They remind me so much of 2017 North Carolina. They dominate the boards. They have multiple bigs that can just rotate in and out and dominate down low. And then they've got the guard play that can create shots and also dish out assists, like with Walter Clayton Jr. and Will Richard and Elijah Martin. They're a fun trio there with those main three guys. And they got Aberdeen coming off the bench. I love the Florida team a lot. I'm worried though, because especially in the Arkansas game, Texas Tech has a ton of shot makers, and like where they can just create their own. And I mean, Christian Anderson, he drilled some big time shots at the end of that game. And I love when coaches have just nice, well drawn up sets. And the baseline out of bounds play they drew up for at the end of regulation, kind of, it was like a minute 15 left to get Anderson another shot. He was wide open for a three, had so much time because John L. Davis got caught up in a stagger screen and didn't realize it was coming and just had plenty of time to get it off. And he's going to make that 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, good job out of you mentioning Anderson, because he, along with Walton, have been kind of the guys that have stepped up in that role with McMillan out. Elijah Hawkins has been a very steady point guard, maybe not scoring wise consistently. I don't think he had a bucket until that late three. Was that in overtime?
I think so. Overtime.
But I know he's been a steady point guard. I just think guard play wise, Florida's going to have a massive edge. But I mean, you pair the front courts between these two teams of Florida, as you've mentioned, and then JT Doppin, and it's hilarious. They describe Darian Williams as a guard forward combo, because that man is built like a undersized four if I've ever seen one. And he's really good at manipulating himself into the paint with his array of moves around the basket and getting up layups. So it's going to be really interesting to see how those front courts really go at each other.
Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, a lot of it's going to be on the health of Condon. And I mean, he came back in the game, if I'm not mistaken, right? He came back in, was still had a little bit of a limp to him, but everything seemed fine. And I would hope with a day's rest, like nothing drastic happened, and he would still be able to come in and provide an impact.
I think the one on Saturday, obviously, everyone's eyes are going to be towards, is the 8:49 Eastern tip-off in this is Newark, New Jersey, between Duke and Alabama. I'm looking at the over-under line right now as of Friday afternoon. Guess what it is?
It's, I want to say, like 165.
You're pretty close. It's 172.5. So it's going to be up there. I mean, again, the winner of this game, I feel like, is going to be in the 90s.
Wow.
Because consistently both of these teams have been scoring in the 90s when they've won in the tournament so far. It's pretty simple. Is Alabama going to continue to hit the shots that they have? 25 of 51 from three against BYU just torched the Cougars across that entire game. But as we've seen in the past, when Alabama plays teams that are a little bit stronger defensively, like a Tennessee, it gets a little tough for them in terms of their scoring output. And then if the shots aren't falling consistently for guys like Mark Sears, it gets really tough to see the outcomes that lead to them winning this game.
Yeah, it just felt like everything was going in when they put it up in that BYU game. But Nate Oates said it after the game, if BYU is going to be going under screens, then we're just going to let it rain.
Which is a very bold decision, I must say.
Oh, yes. Against a team that loves to just get up points and put up threes, that's a very crazy decision there by Kevin Young. But I don't see Duke doing that, especially now having the film on that. They've been a great defense all year. They're going to attack on the ball screens and hedge hard and fight over the top and take away those threes. It's an interesting matchup down low, I think, because I have felt, I mean, they're obviously way more experienced with Grant Nelson and Cliff Amori going up against two freshmen and Cooper Flagg and Malawach. But I think they match up well. They have the length. They're both really athletic. I think they could give that, because that's where they're going to have most success. And Grant Nelson has shown that he can defend on the perimeter where Cooper Flagg is going to be at. So I think that's where Bama can really have some success on this game, is the defensive end if they step up.
If is a key word there.
Yeah.
And if they play like how they did against Youngstown State, and I just felt like the defense was very NBA-esque. It was very lackadaisical, and Youngstown State took the opportunities when they had the chance to. I'm very interested to see how Duke's defense or how their team makeup affects the offensive style of Alabama, because what do they want to do? They either want to take shots from three or they want to get closer to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
So as you said, Mello Walsh down in the post, he's going to be a threat for them, especially when Sears tries to get to the basket. I don't know how consistent they can get those opportunities around the rim with good looks. And then you mentioned the length of Duke at the wings and at the guard spot. How will they handle guys like Konkanipple and Flagg, as you said, can get on the perimeter and play perimeter defense, how they can get those open looks?
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. I mean, Youngblood is strong enough to where he can match up with Konkanipple, I think, but you got to stay out of foul trouble too then. And because Konkanipple's really good at creating contact and drawing fouls and getting one of your better defenders on the bench then for a long period of time. Yeah, they're very athletic and long on the wing, and kind of saw that a little bit when they've played North Carolina this year because of the three guards that North Carolina would go with RJ Davis and Elliott Cadeau and Seth Trimble. They were way too long for North Carolina, and that's where they kind of disrupted them. Will they do that for Alabama too with Mark Sears and Aiden Holloway and those guys? I don't know, but I think they could most certainly, but the way that Alabama's offense has been ran, I think Nate Oates is a good enough mind where he can find a way around it.
I'm going to be pretty boring with these two games. I think both one seeds move on. They're my two championship game teams.
Yeah.
And I've been consistent with that since the tournament started. As you mentioned, the Condon injury could be interesting how that goes throughout. I mean, obviously, if they win on Saturday, that'll be something to look forward to over the next week or so. But yeah, I think we're kind of on a collision course, in my opinion, for a Florida-Duke final. And I know that probably breaks your heart.
It does.
But I'm curious what you think.
It does, but I will admit, hand up, this Duke team is very fun to watch.
They are very likable,
and they are fun to watch. And I hate that coming from a Carolina fan, but there's no hatred around Cooper Flagg. Like the way that he plays, like everybody portrayed him as a villain coming into this year, and he's just very likable. The style of play he plays at, it's so fun to watch. I think the same thing, but I'll go different. I mean, Florida's my champion. I'm going to go with them, and guards win you games in March, and Alabama's going to have the best guard on the floor and Mark Sears, unless you want to consider Cooper Flagg a guard. I know he plays
again,
like it.
Darion Williams, they mentioned him as a guard forward flex too.
Right.
So it's, I don't even know how you can physically do that, but it's interesting nonetheless. So again, those are our two teams coming out of those two matchups. And the next time we talk to you, it's going to be Final Four breakdown.
Crazy that we're already here.
It's insane. This tournament goes by fast, especially once you get through that first weekend. It just tends to fly on by. But I'm not hoping for all ones in the Final Four, but I think in terms of the best matchups, you can't deny that would be fun.
Yeah. And you know, the last time that this happened was in 2008.
San Antonio, right?
Where it was also in San Antonio. So it's written in the stars, kind of, for
really
how
the
good
stars.
These four teams have been all throughout the year. It kind of sets up for it.
Well, you said it perfectly. It does set up for it. We will see if that happens when you watch the games later on Saturday. But for Ryan Time and Timmy Hall, I'm CB. We will talk to you next week previewing that Final Four.